This is the Backlog Battle Podcast, episode 191.
The truck have started to move.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Backlog Battle Podcast. This is Alex.
And this is Anthony.
How's it going?
It's going. I'm back. Good to be back.
Yeah. How was the school stuff? You really seemed so super busy. I was like, what the heck? Like, you're missing a week? What's going on here?
Yeah, and I'm not on a deathbed, so that is good.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. I did miss last week, last year, because I was sick. But this year, it was because I was running a poetry reading. I'd rather be missing the Backlog Battle Podcast for a poetry reading than being sick.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, totally. Before we kind of start with the proceedings of the show, I do want to kind of plug our survey again. And again, this is the Google Form survey. So if you actually followed this link last week or maybe the week before and you saw Google Forms, then you've done the survey. The reason why is because next episode, we're going to be raffling off a copy of Last Day of June for the PS4. So get your entries in, okay? Again, it's the last day of June. It's actually something that we're going to be talking about today. And in order to enter this raffle, all you need to do is you go to mybacklogbattle.tv, and then there's a link up top that is basically a survey link. It says survey. You click on it. It takes you to Google Forms. You fill it in. And then all the way in the bottom, there's a username that you can fill in and stuff. That is separate from all the results that you posted. So we're going to be using that list to determine who actually wins that code. And again, it's just a code. We're going to basically tell you, you know, your username next week. And yeah, hopefully you guys win, you know. I think that's pretty cool. We'll talk more about that later. But have you actually even tried the game yet, Anthony?
A little bit. Yeah, it's got a little bit of a Tim Burton-esque feel to it. It's a little... I like it, and it, for what it is, I guess it's a... The reason it's kind of hard for me to get into, but I need to sit down with it more. And here's the reason why, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm kind of over the Tim Burton-esque feel of things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit over it. But, again, you know, sometimes you have to put your personal feelings for aesthetics to see the game beneath it.
So, yeah.
And even the story. For example, Alex thinks I would like Mario versus Rabbids.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to put my personal feelings against the Rabbids aside to enjoy that game. So
yeah, well, we'll see if you actually, you know, pick it up and stuff. But let's kind of backtrack, because I don't really want to kind of talk about Last Day of June, because I think we need to talk about the most important thing that's happened to you this week, which is you finally got the chance to pre-order the Mario Odyssey version bundle of the Nintendo Switch. That I'm super excited about.
Because we can talk Switch on the show now, together, not just Alex. You're playing Switch, or our guest playing the Switch. I can play Switch.
Yeah, finally. And you're basically getting Super Mario Odyssey the same day you're getting your freaking Nintendo Switch. That's pretty damn amazing, in my book.
And that's going to be a cool fucking game.
Yeah, I think so. So yeah, the 27th can't come sooner. I'm still trying to figure out if I'm going to make a, you know, try-play video of Mario Odyssey, because Nintendo apparently hates YouTube, but that's not something that I picked for this week's like news articles, because we don't really tend to cover that stuff. But yeah, it's
Let's
weird.
Let's not cover TMZ shit, Alex.
TMZ stuff. Like, because I think those things are a little bit inside baseball. I mean, everybody's a content creator on YouTube, but at the same time, everybody's a viewer on YouTube. Anyways, let's just roll into Last Day of June, because we kind of started talking about it. Like,
all right,
I actually posted a review video of this on YouTube, and if you haven't checked it out yet, please go to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/mybacklogbattle. It's a very short review. It's like 5-6 minutes long and stuff. But the bottom line is, like, you mentioned it's very Tim Burton-esque. I actually disagree. It's very more like surreal, painterly, dreamlike kind of. It's almost like a, you know, Van Gogh painting because of the way that it's kind of displayed. But I kind of get where you're going with the Tim Burton aesthetic, because a lot of the characters don't have eyeballs. Like, actually.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, to me, like, looking at the other works of the director, who is, by the way, Massimo Guarini, he's the guy responsible for Shadows of the Damned and the Vita puzzle platformer, Murasaki Baby. Like, Murasaki Baby and this have a very similar style. Like,
well, back up a moment. He was behind Shadows of the Damned?
Yeah.
I love that fucking game.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you loved it, too. It was a very underrated game from 2011, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I need to play it again. Unfortunately, yeah. I sold it. So it's one of those games that I'm kind of kicking my butt for it. But I thought...
Has it aged well?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, that's the question, right? That's the real question. We liked it back in 2011. Do we like it in 2017?
I mean, if you consider that it's like a Resident Evil-style game, I would imagine we would like it again. But who knows, right? Like, there's only been like a handful of Resident Evil-style third-person action games released that were truly, truly, purely action. But going back to this game, though, it's kind of interesting because, like, the more I played it, the more I made comparisons with it to Shadow of Destiny. Because really what it's all about is that you're trying to prevent the death of one of your loved ones. More on that on the YouTube video, by the way. And, you know, and you're trying to basically alter the reality around you by kind of changing the events that unfurl during that day. You know, very much like Shadow of Destiny in a way. And to me, like, I kind of thought that that was actually a pretty neato kind of premise. But that being said, the game's only like 2 to 3 hours long. It's fairly short. So if you actually wanted to play that game, you could finish it in an afternoon, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. An afternoon. Okay. So you would measure it's only a couple hours long then?
Pretty much. Like I said, like one day I was playing it for like maybe half an hour to 45. And then like the last day I played it for like about another hour and a half. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So within 3 hours, you can finish the game. But that being said, though, like where the game excels at, and I feel like this is something that makes the game unique, is that it's very emotionally, you know, powerful. Like, there's not a lot of voice acting in the game. It's a lot of grunts and, you know, like, moaning and, well, not moaning as in that kind of moaning, but, like,
oh,
you know.
Oh, come on, Alex.
You know, but some other audio cues, I guess, for the lack of a better term. And a lot of, like, I don't want to say so much of the story because it is so short, but I like it also because it's not like an adventure game that is made in 2017 or 2016 where it's like all gritty and, you know, like you've got like choice consequences. You know what I'm saying? Like a Telltale game, you know, like I've actually been struggling trying to figure out how to not say like, well, it's not like a Telltale game. You know, it actually feels like it's trying to do a fresh take on the genre.
Allow me to stop you for a moment, okay? Let's talk about this for a quick minute, okay?
Sure.
We talk about the adventure game, right?
Mm-hmm.
You used to be, well, you've always been a huge adventure game fan.
Yeah.
And you loved the Monkey Island back in the day, or what's the one, the Tentacle, Day of the Tentacle and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be, you know, The Longest Journey, I don't know if you played those when those came out. But
yeah, I tried to play The Longest Journey, and I tried to play Dreamfall. I had Dreamfall, but I didn't get into the story as much as other people did, just because it's like, I don't know, like, playing a mouse and keyboard with an adventure game these days is not something that I prefer to do, you know what I mean?
Allow me to ask you something, too, about those two games. Were they a little bit more serious? Too serious, as opposed to the stuff that you enjoyed when you were younger. Maybe that's why.
From a thematic standpoint, it might be like the. I mean, the Longest Journey is like a, what is it? I would classify it as kind of like a fantasy / sci-fi kind of game. You know, it is a bit too serious for my taste sometimes, but I'm trying to think right now what adventure games I've actually played that are kind of serious, and I can't actually... I take that back. There are two games that were actually super serious that I actually played through, which is Gabriel Knight, Sins of the Father, which I think that's the... No, that's not the live-action one, although I do have that. Beast Within, that's what it was called. And Phantasmagoria, which is you brought up about a couple of tri-plays ago.
And I bring up... I brought up a lot during the show because I have played Phantasmagoria, and that's a horror one, so really, really good game, but it deals with some pretty heavy stuff, so maybe, okay, so I don't know what it is about Dreamfall or The Longest Journey that you can get into, but those games, all the games you mentioned, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did they have multiple endings?
I don't think so. No, not necessarily.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Or choices, moral choices. Okay, they were all about enjoying the story and solving the puzzles to progress the story. Now you flash forward to what we perceive as an adventure game, which Telltale kind of set the precedent on. And there's not a whole lot of puzzles in Telltale games, right?
Yeah.
There's more about making choices than the puzzles, right? So you have Telltale games, which could be choose-your-own-adventures, adventure games, or puzzle-based adventure games. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I think really, like, what I'm trying to get at here is that the subject matter is really different. I really don't mind that Telltale games exist because they serve a particular audience, right? What I mind is that there's not a wide variety of them, and they feel a bit samey at the end. Like, there's like a specific kind of archetype that they play to, right? Like, oh, superhero, right. let's do Guardians of the Galaxy, let's do Batman, oh, let's do zombies with, like, you know, a million Walking Dead games, or a spinoff of the Borderlands game, you know, or based off of comic books, which is, you know, they're quite predictable, and it's almost like, and, you know, pardon me for, like, the people who are fans of Telltale games, they're, like, whoring their engine out just so they can tell a story. And to me, like, the formula for Telltale games is kind of getting stale for me.
And that's a fair assessment. I did like New Frontier, as you know, recently. But one of my complaints was the engine, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what held it back, and I think Telltale, I'll be honest, I think they're adept storytellers, but they're limiting themselves, and here's why I think they're limiting themselves. They should, tell me if you agree with this, they should do their own property at this point for us to take them seriously, I think.
Yeah,
I think they need their own IP.
Yeah, because right now they're just kind of borrowing from a lot of people. And, you know, again, I feel like that's why I said the things that I said earlier, because it's like, I would like to think that I am a fan of Batman, right? Like, of all the comic book kind of properties out there, Batman would be the very first thing that I would flock to, pun intended, I guess, to try to experience. But then when I heard about, like, Telltale's Batman game, I was like, you know, that's not really something that I'm interested in. Like, I'm not interested in a Telltale Batman game. I'm interested in Telltale not, you know, like, being able to tell their own stories with, like, original stories in general. Like, I don't know why they feel the need to basically borrow somebody's or even license somebody's game and then make a game out of it. It's like, it's kind of silly.
And let's be honest, a lot of those games have been good. We can't deny that. But I do agree with you that it would be interesting to see what they can come up with on their own. Create their own, you know, universe. Think about the progression of BioWare, right? BioWare used to do that at first.
Yeah.
They did D&D, Forgotten Realms stuff. Then they went to Star Wars. But then after Star Wars, they made their first jab with Jade Empire. Whether you like Jade or Empire or not, at least they were starting to branch out. And while we may not have gotten a Jade Empire franchise, we got Mass Effect out of that. Mm-hmm. We got Dragon Age out of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see Telltale do something similar. Just get out of your box and make your own IP. That would be nice.
The thing is with making new IP is it's so risky. And
it is.
Especially for a company like Telltale, which is like really, really small. I don't think their leadership wants them to be that risky, right? I'll talk about this more when I talk about my review of Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, which the YouTube video I'm guessing is going to come out like next week as of this release of this video/podcast, but I'll save it for that. But kind of going back to The Last Day of June, though, like I think it's a fantastic game. I don't know the price of it, so sadly I can't really make a price values, you know, kind of adjustment to it. But if you guys want to check it out, like I said, like I have a very short review of it on the YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/mybacklogbattle. Go check it out if you haven't subscribed yet. I'm kind of proud of this review, Anthony, because this is the first time I've actually made a video review on YouTube, you know?
Right. Yeah, that... Oh, I got a price for you, good sir.
Okay.
$20.
Ooh.
Does that change anything for you?
Well, I mean... I'll be honest. We got this as kind of like a review copy or review code. $20... It won't change my score. I think that's kind of like where... What I'm kind of deliberating right now is, does that actually change my score? It's still whatever score it is on the video, and I do apologize for like shoving people to like the YouTube to that YouTube video to watch it, but that's why it's there. It doesn't change that, but obviously, like, it's a good enough game that if you feel like $20 is enough or too much, excuse me, that yeah, it might be worth like checking out once it goes down in price. You follow me?
Yeah.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. Okay.
Yeah. So, all right. I guess like that's all we got to say about that.
Well, no, I thought you had more to say. I just thought you had more to say.
I was just pretty much plugging like the YouTube video because it has everything that you're going to ever need to know about the game. And like I said earlier, if you guys want a copy of the game, remember to do that survey on mybacklogbattle.tv. You'll get a free copy of the game. So you don't have to pay $20 for it and you'll be able to experience it. So good stuff.
Hell yeah. That's a hell of a deal. I mean, if we both got it free, why can't you, right?
Yeah, exactly. And again, like we'll basically announce to people next week whether or not they've won it, and we'll add details to that, of course. But tell me about Fire Emblem Echoes, because like you wanted to talk about this today. I have absolutely no idea what it is, other than it's a Fire Emblem game. So, care to talk about it?
All right, it's the third, fourth, fifth Fire Emblem game, depending on how you look at Fates.
Okay. Because
Fates had the three different paths, and they were all full-length games.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to count that as five games, you can. But technically, it's the third Fire Emblem game for the 3DS. And it is a remake.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a remake of the 1992 Fire Emblem Gaiden.
Okay.
It was a Famicom game in 92. Go figure.
Famicom? Just regular Famicom?
Yeah, Famicom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, not Super Famicom, Famicom.
Okay.
So, there you go. So, what I was thinking was about, as I was playing this, there were some considerable changes in this game, gameplay-wise. Let's talk about that for a moment, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, what hasn't changed is, for the most part, the game is the same. It's grid-based. You move around. And one thing I think that's always separated Fire Emblem from, say, Final Fantasy, tactics and things like that, were other than your enemies, there were other elements that you could interact on the field.
Hmm.
You could go into the middle of a villager's house. You can even buy stuff in some cases in the middle of a battle. You could go to the fortress and heal up. There were other interactive elements other than obstacles and enemies. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you agree?
I mean, my only experience is Awakening and Fates, but sure. I mean,
okay, you haven't played much.
I mean, I forgot. You know, like, I'm not a Fire Emblem fan. This, you're talking to the guy who basically said, "I don't like strategy turn-based strategy RPGs."
Okay. I know you haven't played much. I just thought maybe you'd see those elements, but I guess not.
Mm-mm.
Anyhow, you move around and you interact. That hasn't changed. Permadeath hasn't changed. You could choose classic mode or casual mode, right?
Okay.
Where units can be revived. What has changed, though, is the weapons triangle.
Mm-hmm.
And you do know about the weapons triangle, right? At least the, you know, sword, you know, the sword beats the rock, paper, scissors system that they have for weapons, right?
Okay, yeah, all right.
Okay, they took that out.
Mm-hmm, really?
They took that out. And now it's kind of a standard weapon system, and that kind of hurt the game for me a little bit. The other thing they took out, and at first it kind of bothered me, but it actually affected the game more so as I played through it. And that's the durability. Now, I was a big complainer of durability for Zelda, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I felt that, you know, that had never been an issue in previous Zelda games. And part of my complaint was that was too much of a departure for Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm.
For this game, though, it's kind of the opposite. Weapon durability had a point. It had a place. And it took it away. And what's interesting is you have a weapon that levels up with you. And to me, that kind of takes away some of the strategy, because with certain units, you can carry a spear and an axe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And alternate with those. But then you would have your backup weapon in case that weapon didn't have enough uses. And that element was gone, you know? And it also changed the way in how I wanted to attack enemies. I wasn't used to, like, this guy with the sword can go after that guy with the axe, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
I didn't care for that. And again, that weapon kind of grows with you. And then you can get a special weapon, but it's kind of a passive weapon. It's really weird. Now, here's the thing I really didn't like. I felt that weapon durability always worked well with wizards.
Hmm.
Because you would buy them spell books, and the spell books would have numerous uses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Boom, 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 boom. You could use them. The problem, though, was that you took that away, and now it costs health to cast magic. Think about that. Health to cost to cast magic.
Hmm.
Have you ever heard of this being done before at any RPG, Alex?
I want to say I have almost encountered something like that, but I can't really remember the name of that right now.
There are a couple of games, and I can't believe I forget them. Persona games, in fact, that, you know, for physical attacks, you use your HP, like for the Persona games.
Right,
but that makes sense, because those are physical attacks meant for physical characters with high HP, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem that I ran in is that this game also adheres to the mage HP cliche. You mm-hmm. know what that means. Low HP for the mage. So how can your mage be so powerful if he's using his magic for, you know, health? No, using health to cast magic. You hurt yourself in the process. And that really disbalanced the game in a bad way for me.
Hmm. Wow. That's a weird choice. That is a really weird choice.
Okay, why do you think that is?
I mean, for the reasons that you mentioned. Like, if it's like, if the person has like low health, like, and they're the mage, why it's that sounds really silly. Like, I mean, those kinds of units in strategy games are traditionally far enough away where, you know, like, you need to really defend them so that they can kind of volley big shots, like, on the field and stuff. But knowing Fire Emblem and what little I played of it, it's actually also really easy to get to them to hit them. So it's like, you know, it's such a weird choice. Now, I have to ask, though, is that mechanic present in the older game, in the older version of the game, the original?
I don't know much about the original, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But it's something that I should look into, though, a little bit more, because I never thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if these are new changes. And again, let's consider something else. You may have a point. It's called Fire Emblem Gaiden originally.
Mm-hmm.
When a lot of Japanese companies make Gaiden games
mm-hmm.
to their series, well, what you have there is not so much just a change to the story, a side story, but you also have a change to mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be possible.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a very valid point.
Okay.
I didn't think of that. So, yeah, it's I don't know. It's really weird, though. I didn't care for some of these mechanical changes, and it even changed the way I played the game, but I also felt that the game encouraged you to play it the way you should play regular Fire Emblem games, right?
Yeah. And yeah, it's weird. It is weird. Like just hearing the game, you know, just hearing you talk about the game is just turning me off on the whole thing. Like, it's like, this would have been like a purchase for me, but at the same, but you know me and turn-based strategy, like I'm not really into that anymore than you are. But like, it almost feels as though after Awakening, the series has just tumbled and tumbled and tumbled down, which is not actually helping convince me to actually pick up Fire Emblem Warriors, which is not even a turn-based strategy game. But you know, but looking at all these mistakes, it's like, what is going on with that series now? It's like, did they rest too much on their laurels, and all of a sudden it's like, all right, let's muck it up for everybody, you know? Like, I'm really curious, though, to see whether or not these mechanics were originally in the previous game or the original game, the final Fire Emblem Gaiden, because I think that might shed some light into why some of these mechanics are gone, you know?
Yeah, it's something that we should look into, and I agree. But also at the same time, as I picked up this game, I was expecting a solid Fire Emblem experience, and I didn't get that as well. So whether those mechanics carried over or not, it still hurt the game for me, and it's not going to change my opinion if it was in the original. I think it's a fair assessment, but it won't change my review score.
Okay.
And so, I just didn't have fun with the battles. Now, the story is partially why I'm not giving this a lower score than I should.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the story, and what I liked about the story, just real quickly, is you have two main characters, Alm and Celica, right? And they're childhood friends.
Mm-hmm.
And what the story does is it really sets up their friendship, but later on, you know, as they grow into adults, they're both leading opposite armies, and it makes their, you know, that battle more emotional, and that's a lot as to why I stuck with the game, right? Because I wanted to know what happened in the story. So there's a lot of character development and all that. One thing that this game did take away from the last several games in the series is the marriage system, which I don't mind them taking away, but they still have the support conversations. And I do appreciate them keeping them in, because that did add to the character development. They're kind of like the skits in the Tales series. Where they kind of flesh out the characters, and you get to know more about their personalities and things like that. So I appreciate that element. So that was pretty cool.
Okay.
Now, to close out this review, I will talk about dungeon crawling. Now, that felt weird. I felt that the dungeon crawling in this game was tacked on, and it's very similar in the way that I feel like with Tomb Raider, that the weapons upgrade and stuff in that game was tacked on, and I feel the same with the dungeon. And there's a few sections of dungeon, and it's kind of nice to move your character in a free roaming environment, Alex, as opposed to just the map. But it just felt too clunky, and it just felt like an afterthought. And I say clunky because the dungeons were uninspired. They were just corridor over corridor. A lot of them felt like just different colored corridors. And the other thing that bothered me too was I hope this, I'm going to try to keep this as spoiler-free as I can, but once you beat the game, there is a super big labyrinth that opens another episode in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't complete that because, and this is after you beat the main game, because again, it was that same problem of just repetition, mm-hmm. boom, boom, boom. I feel that when you do a dungeon crawl, it should be a little bit more imaginative, and the dungeon should have some inspired design to it.
Mm-hmm.
It felt a little too much like an old Might and Magic game or something like that, where the dungeons were repetitive. So.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, what am I giving this game? A 3 out of 5.
Wow.
I'm giving a 3 out of 5. You know why?
Hmm.
The game mechanic changes were too drastic and not for the better, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
The dungeon elements were not necessary. Now, that goes without saying, the game was not fun. I did have I had enough fun with some of the battles.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt like they took away mechanics and still wanted you to play that game with said mechanics still in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest thing. Dungeons tacked on, but really good storyline. I think that's one thing that Fire Emblem has excelled at ever mm-hmm. since Awakening is story.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big plus. And again, 3 out of 5. And remember, in our system, 3 is not bad.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I'm pretty sure we're going to hear more about Fire Emblem Echoes, even though you have like a final review this week. Like, you know, I am kind of curious about whether or not these things were present in the previous game, because that just seems so freaking wrong, man.
It's bullshit. I'm sorry, but it's bullshit. I was so disappointed with this game because I actually beat it, unlike goddamn Fates, so.
Yeah. And that's another thing, too. I'm not going to get into Fates and go into a rant of how much I fucking just, I'm like, no, hey, Fates.
I need to play more Fates. I want to give you a counterpoint on okay. that. I want to like
Please.
Fates. But again, I don't know. Maybe I'll like Fates as much as you did. Who the fuck knows?
Like I said, please prove me wrong, because I actually want to be proven wrong. Even my girlfriend doesn't like Fates. I mean, she was the most hardcore Awakening fan, and she played Fates, and she's like, what is this piece of crap? I was like, oh, crap. You know?
Oh, shit.
Mind you, I bought both copies, too, so they're both just sitting in their asses. Actually,
I thought you sold them.
Oh, thank you. I was actually trying to remember if I did sell them. I did sell them. Thank you.
I remember you mentioned on the show that you sold them for, like, something else. I don't remember what.
Something better, I hope. I don't even remember what it was.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Speaking of things that are better, I want to talk about Cuphead, because I was so disappointed when I heard this was, like, an Xbox One exclusive title, and then I remembered I have a PC.
That can run games.
Well, surprisingly enough, my friend, Cuphead can run on a toaster PC that was made in 2008, and it'll still work and run at 60 frames per second.
How much is Cuphead?
$20.
I'll think about it.
Yeah, it's really fantastic. So anyways, so this is a game that has been in development for 7 long years. And yeah, the only reason why it's that long is because everything in Cuphead has literally been hand drawn on a piece of paper, scanned on a computer, colored in Photoshop. All the backgrounds in Cuphead are all traditional watercolor backgrounds, just like how they did it in the 1930s.
Movies don't even do anymore.
No, not at all. Everything is digital.
Yeah. Everything's computer generated or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Funny fact about Cuphead. I remember I watched the Xbox event with you years ago when they announced the Xbox One.
Oh, yeah.
Cuphead was in that.
I think it was like 2014 or something, right?
It was 2013.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that was announced that long ago. Holy crap.
Yeah, it was in that Sizzler video of upcoming Xbox One games.
Okay.
And that was the one game that stood out to me other than Killer Instinct.
Mm-hmm. Well, Killer Instinct is on Steam now, so whoop-de-doo. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
More on
Are
fighting
they still
games.
Updating that game?
No, it's the last update came out. So that game is on its way out, I think. Which is really sad, because Killer Instinct was a pretty good game. You know, I wish I had a good rig to play it on. I mean, you know, my PC sadly can't play it. But it certainly can play Cuphead, and I'm really a huge fan of this game, because it is basically a boss parade of a lot of very seemingly familiar boss battles that we played when we were kids, when we were playing on the NES.
Ooh, okay, yeah. So it's a boss battle attack-esque game.
Yeah, so let me give you one of the bosses in this game, right? Each battle is multi-phased, meaning they have different strategies, or they can even randomly pick one from a pool of different phases. So sometimes, like, when you play a game again, you know, or that boss again, they might do something completely different that you've never seen before, which is kind of neat, right?
That is pretty cool.
Let me tell you one boss that really reminded me of something that I played, and maybe you'll remember what that is. You'll probably tell me before I finish it. There is a flying dragon. There are platforms that you have to jump, and you have to avoid the dragon shots as you're platforming.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So what is it?
Mega Man 2.
Exactly. Ding, ding, ding. You got it. So I'm literally fighting a dragon that is that, but it goes in a different direction, but they have different phases. So in this one, he actually can shoot, you know, two different kinds of projectiles, but also he can actually make his tail spawn from the bottom of the screen to actually knock you off your platform.
So, that sounds like it's harder than Mega Man 2.
Exactly. So you're looking at it, you're watching it, and you're playing it, and you're like, I know that boss battle. You got this from Mega Man 2. And then they add a bunch of other stuff there. This game is two-player simultaneous, local play only. There is no online co-op for this game.
Let me ask you a question then.
Okay.
Why do you think more games are doing this more and more now? Have you noticed that there's a lot of games that are doing local play and no online play?
Because online is very difficult to code. You know, I mean, look at Street Fighter V, right? Say no more, right? I mean, I'm just saying. More on Street Fighter V later, yeah. But
and you know what? You know what game I think has bad coding now on hindsight, too? Tekken 7.
For online?
I think it does, yeah. I think it's a peer-to-peer online system. Oh. Remember our experience trying to play it once.
Yeah, well, I think most fighting games are peer-to-peer, though, if I remember correctly. So I don't know
about that.
I think just the rollback is, you know, depending on like how they handle the rollback, that's like kind of like what determines whether a fighting game's online is good or not, you know? Because even now, like ARMS, I mean, you know, after experiencing a lot of that stuff in Splatoon 2, I'm kind of seeing a lot of the things that I've experienced when, you know, I was playing like Tekken 7 with you that one short time we did, you know? Because I don't know if you remember, but I told you that ARMS and Tekken 7's netcode are practically from the same library. You know, it uses Tekken 7's netcode, which I'm kind of
might not be a good thing.
Yeah, it's not so much. But
Cuphead uses local play, though, which is, I guess that can be seen as, here's the funny thing about that before I let you hand it over to you, okay?
Okay.
Cuphead uses local play, but is also that a bad thing? Because for a while we were seeing local play disappear, particularly last gen, during the seventh generation of gaming.
Yeah.
So, because of the lack of online coding and a lot more independent guys, like the Cuphead guys, I assume, are independent.
Yeah, they are.
We are seeing the resurgence of co-op play, which is not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there is still a wide variety of online games there.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me kind of take your point there and kind of run with it.
Okay.
You know, if you're an avid listener of this podcast, you guys have probably noticed that my opinion of Super Mario 3D World has evolved over time to a point where I can't even definitively agree to actually, you know, recommend Super Mario 3D World as a great co-op game. And for obvious reasons, I feel. The platforming, you can leave people behind. Like, that's not fun, right? I mean, That's and I'll even apply it's that to Little Big Planet, which happens, you know, which that happens a lot too, right?
Right.
That's not fun. You know, like that just means like you don't have a solution.
Let me take that further. The new Super Mario Brothers game for the Wii U that had like four players.
But isn't that was 3D World, right?
3D World did have, you're right, 3D World did have four players. But for the Wii, there was New Super Mario Brothers Wii.
That's right.
Yeah, and that game, you could be a major dick.
Yeah. Which, you know, the last time I remembered playing Mario, one of the gameplay experiences didn't require you to be a major dick. Like, that's not, like, part of the Mario, idea, right? Like, that's not the part of the Mario feel. Just as how being a dick in Overwatch is not part of, like, what Overwatch makes it an awesome game, right?
But
like,
with Overwatch, it's harder to be a dick, though. It's very easy to be a dick in Super Mario, in those Super Mario co-op games.
Right. I'm just mainly contrasting it because like when you hear a word like Mario, right, like you have a certain expectation of what it's supposed to be, right? Kind of like, let's bring it back to like Zelda Breath of the Wild, right? Like Breath of the, you hear Zelda, you're expecting like freaking amazing like sword play with the Master Sword and the Hyrulean Shield, right? Not like, oh, I have to throw this away because I can't actually use like the Master Sword and the shield is about to break. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like there's a certain expectation of what you're supposed to do. In Mario, you're supposed to run, jump, and, you know, be happy and kind of like, let's try that really difficult jump and really difficult challenge all over again. Not like, oh, crap, now I have to dodge my friends because they're the obstacles as well. You know?
But let me contrast your point, though.
Okay.
If Mario's supposed to be happy, why does Mario Kart exist? You know, I have a point.
Okay. That's actually a really
you
good
cannot,
point.
All right, you cannot defend Mario Kart in being super happy.
Okay. Mario Kart, but Mario Kart is not Mario the platformer.
Okay, let's clarify that. Platformer okay. Mario Kart.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, if you hear Mario as a platformer game, right? So, going back, you know, kind of turning this back towards Cuphead, the interesting part is when they said that they wanted to add, you know, some minor run and gun sections and some boss battles, I thought, man, that's going to be really chaotic, right? And in a way, you know, if you play with people who, you know, aren't used to that kind of gameplay, it can be chaotic. There's a lot of bullets on screen. There are actually shmup sections in the game, Anthony, that you actually play two players with, in case you're wondering. And there are, you know, as far as the boss battles go, what's interesting is they're all stuck in one screen. Sure, the platforms can move left and right and disappear and what have you, but the greatest thing about them is that you don't have to worry about leaving the screen, because the boss is just right there. So in a way, that sort of design complements, you know, the co-op experience. Now again, I'll restate this, the bullets do make the whole screen feel a bit more chaotic, especially if you actually hold down the fire button, it actually automatically rapid fires bullets. You don't need to mash it over and over. So inherently what's going on is there are a million bullets flying all over the place, and sometimes that makes it very difficult for you to find where your character is on screen. Because even, you know, like let's say like the boss starts firing things, right? It gets really freaking dangerous. So that being said, like, it's such a fun game. I've been playing it with my girlfriend as well. I want to actually finish it. It's a great looking game. It reminds me a lot of like the old Max Fleischer cartoons. Mm-hmm. And you know, the funny thing is like, I actually started watching some of those old Max Fleischer cartoons on YouTube because they actually have them. And
they're open domain.
Open domain. And it's interesting because playing this game is making me appreciate those cartoons even more and making me want to watch them even more.
Which ones are you watching?
Just random Max Fleischer stuff, like some with Betty Boop, some not, some old Popeye, some not.
The Supermans?
Not the Superman stuff.
The Supermans are awesome, though.
I think that's actually after that era.
No. They have, Max Fleischer did the Superman cartoons in that era. They're amazing.
I think, well, unless, you know, he drew, like, Superman as a circle, I don't think we're thinking of the same kind of style here.
No, yeah. There's the Max Fleischer Superman cartoons.
I know, but, like, but not the Max Fleischer cartoons that are actually the influences for Cuphead.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I gotcha. The Betty Boop stuff, you're right. Yeah, that's more of a influence on that than the Superman stuff. Yeah, you're 100% right.
Yeah. I'm watching more of those kinds of animated films. Yeah.
So let me ask you this then.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to Mario, but keep Cuphead in mind, okay?
Sure.
I think Mario 3D World is a great game, but let me tell you why I think it's a great game. I think it's a great game when it's played alone. I think New Super Mario Bros. Wii is a great game when played alone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The problem with those games is those games are designed for one player in mind because, and not four players.
Yeah.
There's your problem. It's basically when people say they want a co-op mode or something, like when they, you know, say they want that added to a game, they think you can just tack the motherfucker on and just leave it be, right?
Well, because, like, if you think about what we've gotten, right? Like, Halo is actually an example of the tack on, right? Like, because really the second player doesn't really exist. It's just another Master Chief model.
Yeah.
You know? So it doesn't really make sense. I mean, obviously, later Halo games, they added new characters, whoop-de-doo.
Like the Arbiter, like, you could play as the Arbiter in Halo 3, but I can also add to your argument, though, of earlier Halos, mm-hmm. that Halo 3 supported four players. So at that point, it would be generic Arbiter and generic Spartan. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and you know what it did to playing multiplayer Halo, Alex? Mm-hmm. It cheapened it. It made the game too easy. The games weren't designed with four players or two players in mind.
Right. It didn't scale the difficulty. It was just
exactly.
It was just like one player, you know? Obviously, they learned a lot from that when they made Destiny, because that one scales, right?
Okay.
But we're not talking about that. Obviously, we're talking about Cuphead. And by the way, the difficulty does scale in Cuphead. In fact, if the second player is completely dead, it scales back down. So you're basically not playing a game where it's completely unfair odds when the second player, you know, gets killed, basically, and you can just kind of finish it yourself. It reverts back to one player mode if you can't save the second player. So to me, like, that's kind of an interesting design choice. And, you know, it's kind of interesting to play this game because it's such a mix of so many awesome games, right? Like, Contra is the first thing that comes to mind. A lot of people compare this game to, like, Gunstar Heroes. A lot of people also compare this to, like, you know, like, Parodius, because a lot of the designs of some of the characters are kind of pseudo-inspired by Parodius. There's so much interesting visuals in this game and mechanics. And just the cleverness of, like, them saying, like, oh, yeah, you know, if you keep dying and dying on this boss, we'll just slowly introduce, like, a new mechanic that you've never known before so that, you know, you're not bored, right? Because what is the most boring thing in, like, a game that's, like, really difficult? Like, there's no variance, right?
Yeah,
like,
you can't. It's the same thing killing you over and over and you feeling frustrated by it.
Exactly. So in Cuphead's case, it actually tries to vary it and actually sometimes adds, like, a new phase, a new kind of enemy that you might be facing. Like, there was this one enemy where there was a possibility of, like, one out of five different things that could come out and actually, like, attack you while the boss is attacking you. And then they kind of layer upon challenge on top of it so that way, you know, it's that even though whether you're facing that enemy the first time or first phase, second phase, or third phase, there is some increase in difficulty as well. So I really love this game. Like, this is probably, I don't generally go for, like, really difficult games, but to me this is, like, it's odd because it reminds me of why I loved the NES so much. It had so many difficult moments, but the way that they created this game, because if you think about this, Anthony, it's like Super Mario World. It's a big world map. The different parts of the map have a boss or a run and gun stage or a flying stage. That's it. So
there's a variety to it. That's because let's be honest. That's what made Mario 3 such a special game, even compared to its still pretty good predecessors. Right.
Right. Right. Right. But what I'm saying is, like, there are just boss battles, or there's a run and gun, or there's flying stages. So the boss battle isn't preceded by a bullshit, like, you know, run and jump section. You know what I'm saying? It's just the boss battle. So in that sense, it's hard, but it's actually palatable and actually doable in bite-sized chunks. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I think I know what you mean. So could I say something real quick?
Yeah.
Why do we get so frustrated with Ninja Gaiden, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Ninja Gaiden levels, for the NES at least, were huge, right? And right. Then there's the notorious Act 6 where, you know, you get to those final bosses, you die, and it makes you start all the way at the fucking beginning of the act.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's why the NES games were frustrated, because they were larger scale things. It sounds like it's just these small run and gun sections or these small and boss sections with Cuphead, you know, and because they're small in scale, it's not as annoying because you don't have to start all the way at the beginning of something necessarily that you had. It's not like all the work you did was undone. Does that make sense?
Exactly. Like, the boss battle has multiple phases, right? But it's not, you don't have, like what you said, you don't have to deal with like a bullshit level before that took you forever to get through because you died, right? You just focus on figuring out how to properly defeat that boss, period. And at first, I'll admit, I was really hesitant in hearing, like, oh, most of this game is just boss battles. But then after playing it, I finally understood what they mean. And because it's so focused on teaching you and kind of, like, helping you understand, like, how the game works and the mechanics of it, it really brings about, like, a different kind of appreciation from me. Like, it's almost like, I compare everything to Overwatch, but it's like the Overwatch of action platformers. It's like it's approachable. It's gonna kick your freaking ass big time, but you could leave if you want to, try something else, and then come back to it.
It seems like to me it's part of this new, I wouldn't say trend, a new trend in games where it's accessible but still challenging, but it's not overly hard, right?
Right.
And I think, you know, you using Overwatch is just that. You can win as many times at Overwatch as you lose as many times at Overwatch, right?
Mm-hmm. But and you still want to keep playing, right?
Exactly. And it doesn't discourage you. I think, like, I'll give you an example. As much as I love Tekken 7, it's still a fighting game. And mm-hmm. I can win battle after battle, but sometimes when my streak is broken, I'll just go into a slump of losses.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that sucks because you're so discouraged that your momentum has hurt. But with games like Overwatch, there's still a chance you may have lost this game. But I never felt that I got into slumps with Overwatch.
It's the difference. So, you know, going to, you know, taking this conversation to, you know, just away from Cuphead a little bit. Tekken 7, the responsibility of winning is solely rests in your hands, right? Nobody else is kind of with you. The reason why it's so kind of like more friendly in Overwatch in a way is because you're not the only team member there. You have other five people that can pick up your slack if, let's say, you were just having a bad day. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, in a similar way, you know, in Cuphead, I feel like because it tries to have mechanics that try to teach you how to dodge and be more effective at that, like, I think that it's over time, it's kind of like you feel like you're getting better, right? You feel like you're getting better over and over and over. Yeah, the responsibility of beating the boss and all that stuff relies solely on your shoulders, but again, you're spending 15-30 minutes beating that boss as opposed to beating a long ass level, then beating the boss. You know?
That's a good point.
And because that's a common archetype in action platformers, right?
Even as much as I love Shovel Knight, it's guilty of that as well.
Yeah. So they decided, hey, let's just put all the challenge in the boss battles. And it works. It works extremely well. And I'm actually super happy that this game is being played by so many people, because I was worried that since it was an Xbox One exclusive, that not a lot of people were going to pick it up. But smart people have a PC and they got it on Steam. So
I might check it out on Steam. I am secretly hoping, though, for a PlayStation 4 release.
They said that they're not going to do that.
But how many times have people said that? Just saying.
Well, they said that it's an Xbox One exclusive, pretty much.
We'll see.
Now you might be right. You might be right that next year they're probably like, hey, Cuphead's come out. And then they realize everybody who had a PS4 actually had a good PC and bought it there. So anyways, that being said, I'm not ready to actually give a review on Cuphead. I want to beat the game before that. I'll give you a provisional review and I'll give it a 4.
Why now, a 4?
Not a 5, because right now there are items that you can buy that you can use that I feel like some of those items, I don't see the use of them at all. Like, there are very optimal builds, if you will, for your character that you should buy, and I don't feel like the other abilities offer any sort of value whatsoever. Now, that just basically means I have to play more of the game. You know, maybe my mind will change once I play a lot more of that, right? But yeah, it's a 4 out of 5. And actually, before we move on, I want to kind of say that we do have a try play of Cuphead that actually came out last week. You guys should check it out at youtube.com/mybacklogbattle. Really fantastic try play. Gotta check it out, Anthony, if you haven't yet. Mm-hmm. It's really, really good.
I sure will.
Okay. So, anyways, last week, we started off doing news articles and stuff, in addition to the community questions and, you know, the questions that people send us on the podcast. But before we actually continue that, I want to plug our Amazon link, which is bit.ly/AmazonBacklogBattle. Once again, that is bit.ly/AmazonBacklogBattle. Remember, if you're an Amazon Prime member and you pre-order a game, you're going to get 20% off of that game once it gets released. And, you know, you've used that, right? Like, to get games on day 1?
Oh, yeah, I have.
Yeah.
Dragon Quest 8?
That's right. You got Dragon Quest 8 from there. And, you know, you got that on time, you know? There's no delays.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
No, we both had that issue with Dragon Quest 8 for the 3DS.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, yeah. Why did you bring that up, Alex?
Damn it. Well, you can always, like, kind of do what we did and kind of call them and be like, can we have an extension of our Prime?
Pre-month,
you
know, that's
yeah, pretty much a Prime. Anyways, okay. So Amazon link is bit.ly/AmazonBacklogBattle. We thank you for your support of the podcast and the YouTube channel. All right. Are we ready for some news articles, Anthony?
Yeah,
I picked three. Okay. We'll start with, like, some of, you know, a really easy one. How about that? I'll throw you, like, I don't play baseball. I don't even know what
just,
the hell. Like,
just
the
tell
easiest
me what it is. Fuck baseball analogies. We don't use them on the show.
Okay. I was trying to be like
Unless
Jables.
Unless it's first base with a girl.
I thought third base was good. Anyways.
Oh, no. Yeah. Home run is what's really good.
Okay. Because I was like, first base only? Like, wow. Don't set yourself down like
that.
No,
man. Nothing's going on with that. So I'm just saying.
Okay. I wasn't even trying to get into that. But all right. Overwatch's Halloween event comes back this week. So by the time you guys listen to this show, the Overwatch Halloween event is back.
Cool. Ooh,
yay.
Well, so, I can I be honest?
Yeah.
I have nothing to say on this. It's just, that's cool. It's more of the free shit that you get from Overwatch. There's not much else I can say.
Yeah. Well, here's one thing that you probably might like.
Okay.
Just like the summer event, what they're going to do is all the cool, like, costumes they released last year will actually be out to purchase again this year, but it'll be at a much cheaper price. So you can actually buy them with cheaper using credits. So if you just play Overwatch like once a day and you know, like, you just get that credit, because you know what actually my girlfriend does? She actually comes home every lunchtime and actually plays Overwatch for about an hour until she levels up. Because if you level up, you get a loot box. You know, it doesn't really take too long. It takes like about, you know, 30 minutes to 45
minutes. That is not bad.
Yeah. So if you just do that every single day, you'll probably get like one of the Halloween costumes, you know?
So, yeah. Why the hell not, right? Why the hell not? Yeah. Get some free credits and then go off and do some Overwatch, and there you go. Now, yeah. It's the credits in-game, right? Let's clarify that. The credits let's clarify that, because there is a big difference these days with sometimes in-game currencies. There's some in-game currencies that you could use to buy stuff, and then there's in-game currency you have to use real money to buy and all that, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One thing that I'm going to restate, because you probably don't remember this, Anthony, is that the amount of duplicates have been dramatically decreased. So basically, you don't get a lot of duplicates anymore, like when you actually get a loot box. So you get more new stuff, you know? So that's really, really cool if you want to just play Overwatch and get, you know, the costumes. It's, you have a higher likelihood of getting it. And also, like, they increase the amount of credits you actually get to spend and stuff like that.
That works for me.
Yeah, totally. All right, so moving on. Street Fighter V Arcade Edition announced, and it's going to be releasing in January 18.
Almost 2 years to its initial release.
Almost, yeah. So it says here that the retail disc is going to come with all the characters on both season passes. And apparently, if you buy the retail disc, it unfortunately is not actually going to unlock all the characters for you. So, wow. Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing because of the way that they set it up, I think. Now, here's the really cool part about this. For the exception of the characters, everything else is free, right? And one of the things that they announced is that they actually have an arcade mode, which actually has a varying number of battles, right? Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you want to pick the Street Fighter 1 arcade mode, you're fighting 4 battles. If you pick Street Fighter 2, you're fighting 8 battles. If you're picking Street Fighter Alpha, you're playing 10 battles. Street Fighter 3, you're playing 6. Street Fighter 4, you're playing 8. And Street Fighter 5, you're playing 11. Now, I don't know what determines these numbers. They never were very clear about it. But I was just really glad to see that they even, you know, like actually thought about this, right? You
know what I'm excited for? Because I did read this article. The UI change.
Yeah, it looks great. It looks snazzy.
It looks like a fighting game UI, not this weird billboard looking shit that the main game was. You know what, too? It's funny. It never bothered me until I read this article, the UI for Street Fighter V. It kind of did it. There was something about it that it looked weird. But now that I think about it, it's not a good UI.
It's not. Yeah. So just to kind of add to what you said, the arcade mode free update will include an extra battle mode. Who the fuck knows what that is?
Okay.
A new selectable second V trigger for all characters. So all characters are actually getting a second V trigger, which is kind of crazy. And in addition to that, it's going to have a gallery mode where you can actually watch all the stills from the story mode. And of course, the UI design overhaul that you mentioned. So
I wonder if there's going to be endings for the arcade mode.
I hope so. I really hope so.
Because they said it's going to be a classic arcade experience.
Yeah.
No, wait. But classic arcade experience does include endings, Alex.
Yeah, I know. I was in agreement with you, my friend.
Oh, no, I know. That's just the way you said it. I thought you meant, like, classic arcade mode did not include.
No. Well, let's see, right? Like, we have a storyline going on right now where, like, you know, we've noticed, like, arcade modes and fighting games have been buried and buried and buried over time, so.
Or omitted completely, then added on later.
Yeah, in this case.
But 2 years later.
But, you know, hey, you know what? It's free. Yeah, we're getting it. After everybody is like, oh, we're not going to get it. We're getting it. Super happy. Anyways. Looking forward to that. Maybe it'll be a good excuse for us to actually pick up our fighting sticks and play against each other, right, Anthony?
I'm down with that.
Sweet. I mean, I wonder who the next character is going to be, though, of Season 2.
How many characters we got in Season 2? Because we both have Season 2 passes.
We have gotten everybody except one, which is the last one. They haven't revealed them yet. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways, so looking forward to that. The last news article is interesting. former Square Enix employee arrested for allegedly stocking up game consoles for resale. Now, in case people don't know, video game console resale is a violation of the Japanese trust law. Okay, whoa. So that's pretty bad. It's like a felony. Let me read the article. Koji Takada made his name at Square Enix as a sales manager, with his name in the credits for games like Dragon Quest IX. Earlier this month, he was arrested for allegedly improperly ordering game consoles for resale, a violation of Japanese trust law. According to Gigi Press, the 56-year-old Takada allegedly would deceptively buy Nintendo 3DS handhelds and other game consoles while making contracts with clients, reportedly saying the hardware was necessary. Then, it's said that Takada would supposedly resell the game machines, resulting in a 1.4 million yen or $12,374 loss for Square Enix. So,
whoa.
Yeah.
Wonder if that's legal here, though.
I don't know. That's it's kind of weird because it seems like he's also talking maybe about like his clients from within Square Enix, and that's just bad. I think that might be illegal here too, because it's almost like you're using the company you work for to kind of conduct your business.
It's kind of like, you know, if I worked for a warehouse that produced Sega Genesis in the 90s and I took a bunch of them and sold them.
Yeah, that's okay. Exactly what that is.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Is he modding them though? I wonder.
No, he's not. He's just reselling them.
Damn.
I don't think this guy, you know, from what this article says, is like he's actually like, you know, talented enough to do that. He has a talent for apparently like, you know, turning around things. So maybe there's that.
Man, imagine if it was Nomura doing this.
That would be funny. That would be funny.
That would be a game changer for Square Enix.
Right. Yeah,
and
totally.
And less belt buckles. So
yeah, less belt buckles all around. So, all right, guys, we're going to do something like really new too. Oh. If you guys want us to talk about like any news articles, please send us an email at podcast@mybacklogbattle.tv. We'll talk about that as well. And we'll add that to like the following week's, you know, news articles. I think that's a pretty good idea. Before we continue to our next segment, I want to plug our Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat accounts. That is My Backlog Battle. Like, it's the same username across all four pieces of media. Again, that's Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and Snapchat, My Backlog Battle. I'm on Twitter and Facebook a lot more, you know, more so than Instagram and Snapchat, because I mean, I don't really buy a lot of physical stuff, so I guess there's that. But when I go to events, you'll be certain that I'll post something on like Instagram and, you know, maybe even Snapchat some stuff. But that being said, our Facebook page has actually been quite a hive of huge activity, because what's kind of crazy is that, you know, I posted a bunch of questions like the past week or so, and a lot of people have been responding to it. And I think people really like these questions. So I'm going to basically ask you first, Anthony, what this week's community question is, and then I'll read some of our, you know, for our readers and fans and stuff. You down?
Yeah, I'm down.
Okay, this week's question is pretty simple. Favorite/love to hate RPG villain.
Love to hate RPG villain.
Or favorite. I mean, I put the love to hate in case, like, it would sound weird that you actually really, really like a villain for kicking the shit out of you. I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, that's easy. Kefka.
Okay.
You fucking hate that little fucker, but he's possibly, and according to general consensus, which I don't normally go by, he is considered one of the greatest video game villains of all time, because he probably does some of the worst things in a video game.
Mm-hmm.
Poisoning people and destroying the
technically,
world.
Technically, he's the only Final Fantasy villain that won, right?
Yeah. He's probably one of the few video game villains to win in general.
Yeah. I mean, he destroyed the world.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, you know, there's no ends, ifs, or buts about it. Yeah, that's obviously my first choice. In fact, when I posted the question, Kefka was actually on the image and stuff. So, all right. So let's read up on some people's suggestions here. William says that his favorite slash most love to hate villain is Persona 4's culprit. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Because you didn't really suspect them until the end. So, Chris says, awesome to see Kefka on here. I'd say the villain from the Persona games, whether it's P2, P3, P4, and P5. So this guy just basically like just threw like, you know, a net over the entire Persona series and just said, yeah, the main bad guys of all of those.
Every main bad guy.
Yeah, pretty much. Every bad guy from those games, which is cool. Matt says, Krellian from Xenogears.
Okay. Being the Xenogears expert, I forgot about him. But you know why I didn't say him? You said love to hate.
Mm-hmm.
Krellian.
I mean favorite slash love to hate. So it's like, you know, either or.
Krellian is, there's two things going for Krellian in a way. He does very horrible things, but he's very traumatized. Kefka, there's really no reason. Kefka just does what he does, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, with him, there's a lot of reasons as to what he does. And he's one of those villains that he thinks he's doing the right thing. Fun fact about mm-hmm. Krellian, too. He is the one JRPG main villain you never fight in the game.
Mm.
You never fight Krellian at all. But he is the main villain of Xenogears. But you mm-hmm. never fight him.
Well, I think we can assume that they just ran out of time for that character.
Oh, no. That no? They did. No. With the way his story arc ends, you could tell that had nothing to do with it. No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. All right. I'm going to shut my trap because obviously I don't know anything about Xenogears.
That's fine. I don't know much about certain games you play, so it's okay.
It's true. All right. The last one is actually Jared, who basically says Kefka, no doubt. So pretty damn easy. Pretty damn easy list. Also, I want to call out the people who actually just clicked like on the comment without actually listing theirs. Where the hell are you? You obviously had enough time to like the post. Why didn't you post anything on the comments? Xander, I am looking at you. Yes.
Oh, yes. No. Calling out guests of the Pat Backlog Battle podcast, Alex.
Hey, you know what? They need to be attentive. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. It happens. And besides, like Xander knows, like we're pretty cool. We're, you know, we're buddy buddies, right?
We're all buddy buddies still with him. So.
Yeah. Okay. So that's basically this week's community question. Obviously, if you guys want to catch all these community questions, post it. You know, remember, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat, My Backlog Battle. I'll be posting these questions, you know, just in time for the weekend. So, you know, take a look at that, and hopefully you guys like it. And I do want to give a shout out to all the JRPG and RPG fans that are fans of the podcast. You guys are freaking great. JRPGs and RPGs are awesome. So,
indeed.
Yeah. All right. Question of the week. So, in case you guys don't remember, you can still send some emails and, you know, some posts to us. You could even send it through the different social media that I posted to you guys. So if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, email us at podcast@mybacklogbattle.tv, and then we will answer them on the show. So this question is by Eric. He asks, what is our current favorite translation error in a game?
Oh.
Yeah.
Current?
We gotta dig. Well, you know, what is your favorite translation error in the game? I don't even. God, I have to look it up. Okay. Let me say mine so it can buy you some time.
Okay.
Somebody posted on Twitter that they had Nap. Like, so it's not an actual game thing, like a game comment, but the response that I gave him is, I think, telling of, I guess, how ridiculous the grammar is in this one. And also because it's from Metal Gear. The truck have started to move. it's a classic, so...
The truck to have started to move.
Yeah. It's a classic. So I think that's my favorite. Like, that's like, because it's so ridiculous. I mean, another thing that I could probably bring up, which I actually tweeted on my Twitter account, which is twitter.com/mybacklogbattle, on the 3-year anniversary of the creation of that Twitter account, was the video for All Your Base Are Belong to Us.
So, nice.
That's one thing.
That's a classic, obvious one. Okay, I got mine.
Okay.
We're going to go back to Xenogears for a moment, though, okay?
Oh, okay.
It's one of the things that Takahashi has made very clear over the years is that there's a lot of inspiration from other science fiction works. Soylent mm-hmm. Green being an obvious one. People who played the game know what I'm talking about. Another mm-hmm. one is the classic novel Childhood's End. Have you heard of this mm-hmm. novel?
No, I have not.
It's considered a science fiction classic by Arthur C. Clarke. You know who he is, though, right?
Well, yeah.
Okay. So, Childhood End is considered one of his greatest books, and essentially there is a character called Corallin.
Hmm.
Remember the character we mentioned earlier, Corallin. In the Japanese games, they directly call him Corallin, which is an English name. Mm. But due to a mistranslation in the translation of Xenogears, they called him Corallian. So go figure this. They mistranslated a Japanese name that was originally an English name.
Wow.
Because he's supposed to be called Corallin as an homage to that character in Childhood End.
Interesting.
Yeah, so go figure.
So that's your favorite, like, translation error?
Because of the irony of it.
I see. Wow. That's a pretty good one. In case people want to kind of submit their own favorite, you know, translation errors and all that stuff, email us at podcast@mybacklogbattle.tv. You know, we're not the only ones here who are part of the Backlog Battle Army. If you're listening to this podcast, you are part of the Backlog Battle Army, and we urge you to email us at podcast@mybacklogbattle.tv and let us know a little bit about you if you want to email us some questions, comments, or suggestions, all right? So, Anthony, we have sadly gone to the last part of the show, which is to say our goodbyes to everybody who has been listening to us for the past hour and a half, maybe.
Fare thee well.
Fare thee well. So, anyways, hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the podcast. Again, be sure to like, share, and subscribe, you know, if you're actually watching this on YouTube. And, of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or any podcatching software if you're listening to those as well. At any rate, thank you very much for watching us, listening to us, whatever you're doing. And we'll see you guys next week. Happy gaming.